Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, January 15, 2026. On the front page of the News Gazette, A Way of Seeing the World. Bachelor's degree proposed with focus on hip-hop culture. When someone says the word hip-hop, a few different images might spring to mind. A rapper spitting out a stream of words faster than a speeding locomotive. A breakdancer moving in ways that seem almost impossible. A graffiti artist painting a vibrant flood of words and images onto a brick wall. However, according to University of Illinois professor Adam Cruz, hip-hop isn't just limited to the arts. It's a way of thinking that can be applied across a variety of disciplines. Engineering, architecture, science, education, business, therapy, social work, etc. When we talk about the elements of hip-hop, the foundational ones that folks often cite and talk about DJing, MCing, breakdancing, graffiti, are the common artistic ones that come up, he said. But the fifth element of hip-hop culture is also knowledge. So hip-hop is also a way of knowing and a way of engaging with other people, and a way of expressing oneself and a way of understanding critical perspectives that really, hip-hop can engage with any other kind of discipline. Cruz is the hip-hop culture and the arts coordinator for the College of Fine and Applied Arts, director of curriculum at the Dr. William Patterson Hip-Hop Innovation Center, and associate professor of music education. He is also lead on a team that has put together a proposal for a new Bachelor of Arts degree in hip-hop culture and the arts, which is up for a vote on Tuesday's Board of Trustees meeting. The proposal is also subject to review by the state's Board of Higher Education, U of I officials said. If approved, the program will start accepting students via transfer in the fall, but it will not be on the freshman application right away, said Jake Penholster, dean of the College of Fine and Applied Arts. We're well past the date in this year where most freshmen have already applied, he explained, so we'll hopefully get a few students in next year to kind of start piloting the work. We're really hoping to recruit a healthy freshman class in fall of 2027. The proposed degree program is intended to centralize hip-hop as a field for academic inquiry, create practice, personal expression, community building, and personal opportunities, according to a memo to the board. Students will explore the foundation and evolution of hip-hop culture, generate their own artistic work, critically examine ethical issues, develop contemporary digital media skills, and gain experience to build networks and cultivate opportunities for building revenue streams and social impact, U of I officials said. Blending theoretical study with arts-based practical application, the proposed program will produce graduates who are knowledgeable, critical scholars, as well as skilled practitioners of hip-hop culture. If approved, the degree would include course options aimed at a variety of disciplines and of future careers, with officials identifying communications, education, nonprofit work, and cultural entrepreneurship as some of the fields graduates might go into, in addition to arts-based disciplines such as music and choreography. The program does not require any new funding or faculty in order to launch. The university currently offers a minor in hip-hop culture and the arts. The bachelor's degree is new, but the work has been going on for a very long time, Cruz said, specifically pointing to the work done by the late William Patterson, a U of I professor who combined hip-hop with disciplines such as education and leadership. Still, hip-hop has happening in the margins and pockets in different places, such as elective courses and one-off workshops in disciplines that often didn't interact with each other, Cruz said. We realize that there's enough happening already that if we could just build the infrastructure to connect all these pieces, to take hip-hop from the margins and build it into its own program, where hip-hop could be central and not just sort of an elective and in your spare time. That's where the program comes from, Cruz said. He added that the proposed degree is intended to provide flexibility for students looking to double major. According to Cruz, many of the courses that would be a part of this degree already exist, such as classes in beat-making, DJing, hip-hop history, and cultural studies. However, there are also plans to add advanced studies and collaborative studio opportunities for artists from different disciplines to come together. One of the classes he's most excited about is launching this semester and will be taught by Professor Pete Shingu. The course is entitled Hip Hop Ambassadors and draws inspiration from Patterson. He would often bring students from campus to places where he was working, like the Boys and Girls Club, or to work with a nonprofit like Street College, or to go to work in schools, Cruz said. And he would call those students Hip Hop Ambassadors. It was just sort of a title he gave them, but it wasn't anything official. The Hip Hop Ambassadors class is a requirement for those pursuing the minor. It would also be mandatory for the major. He said students will meet weekly in a seminar format while taking part in community assignments. In discussing the proposed bachelor's degree, Penholster said that it's important for universities to create cultural pathways. He noted that for a long time, many dance and music programs in the academic world have only recognized Western classical music, jazz, and a few other disciplines. Every student from every culture should be able to see their path forward for themselves in higher education, he said. But also, this is the stuff that people are actually doing today in music. We need this from the standpoint of both industry and economic viability for lifelong art making. A fond farewell. Little did Dr. James Shepherd know what awaited for him during his final shift Wednesday at Urbana's Carle Foundation Hospitals. Co-workers lined the halls, cracked confetti poppers, and literally rolled out a red carpet for a clap-out ceremony celebrating the career of the retiring OBGYN physician. After more than 33 years and over 6,000 babies, I am filled with gratitude for the families who invited me into the most joyful and vulnerable moments of their lives, said Shepherd, for whom the maternity ward was temporarily renamed on his last day. Carle Health has been my professional home, and I am thankful for the colleagues, nurses, and team members who made this work so meaningful. To the next generation of physicians and caregivers, stay curious, dream big, and never lose sight of the impact you have on the lives in front of you. Champaign County Community Coalition. Schools focus on truancy issues. New initiative launching early thanks to social media response. The original plan was to roll out Champaign-Urbana School's new student attendance campaign sometime around Valentine's Day. But after one 30-second video teasing the Every Student, Every Day initiative was released last week on social media, we had so much demand, said James Harden, Unit 4's Executive Director of School Improvement and Engagement. So the item was a late addition to the agenda for Wednesday's first Champaign County Community Coalition meeting of 2026. The promotional video features Champaign and Urbana's mayors, school police chiefs, and others wearing Every Student Every Day merchandise as a jingle plays in the background. Attendance, again, is our number one predictor of success, Harden said. We know that we have a very strong curriculum. We know that if we can put students in front of the curriculum on a daily basis, we will achieve growth and just overall achievement will go up. In Unit 4, Harden said, the next phase will be to involve schools' leadership teams, then gear it towards students and their families. I can't say that a bunch of 16-year-olds are going to want to wear a shirt that says Every Student Every Day, but what if we get getting the leader of the student council, the leader of drama club, the cheerleading captain, the president of the LGBTQ club, Harden said. When that starts to happen, then we really have a powerful machine and group accountability. There are three versions of the shirts, Harden said, one for English-speaking students and others for students who speak Spanish and the Congolese language Lingala. Getting every student to show up every day has been a struggle for larger districts statewide, including Champaign-Urbana. According to State Report Card, Unit 4's 24-25 chronic absenteeism rate, the number of students who missed 10% or more of school days, with or without a valid excuse, was 34.8%, well above the 25.4% state average. The rate in Urbana's district 116 was even higher, 38.9%. There's a direct correlation between attendance and performance, said retired Urbana teacher Barbara Gillespie. I'm writing down the scores and I'm seeing what they've done, their comfort, their gaps, and I know is because they're not in school, she said. Harden said Unit 4 has created three tiers of intervention for students with consistent attendance problems. The first tier involved announcing the initiative to every student and expanding the campaign through shirts and social media. Tier 2 narrows the focus to a smaller group of students. Unit 4 staff will help create attendance plans for these students, which may involve providing backup rides, alarm clocks, call reminders, or bus tokens. Tier 3 is much more intensive, Harden said. Here's a truancy intervention specialist who may be introduced to work directly with a student one-on-one. Education is a ticket to the middle class, he said. Education is our society's greatest equalizer, and it is just unfortunate that when our students, for whatever reason, are not in front of the teachers or not participating in face-to-face instruction. Despite all the early stage excitement, Harden said, everyone needs to remember, this is about the kids, and that's where we have to be very careful to not lose focus. This is about getting kids to school, not about me wearing a t-shirt. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Kevin Lambert's The Rock Show debuts Monday on WKIO 105.5 FM and WRHK 94.9 FM. It runs 5 to 9 a.m. weekdays and offers a mix of music and entertainment. Central Illinois Media Group's talented newcomer on board since October, said Chuck Kaplinski, whose movie reviews can be read weekly in the News Gazette, will soon be a part of the show that he hopes makes the drive to work a little bit better. Show ideas? Email Lambert at klambert@cimg.media. Teacher of the Week, Susan Scheel, Social Studies, Northridge Middle School, Danville. Putting history in context. While working as a paraprofessional at Salt Fork South Junior High for 7 years, Susan Scheel realized she had found her passion. At that point, she went back to school to become a teacher. Now she's in her second year of teaching social studies at Northridge Middle School in Danville. I find my work important because understanding history is crucial to understanding the present. Social studies often gets overlooked as a core class, but to me it's the most important subject there is. I'm not only preparing my students for tests, but for life. I became a teacher because I have always had a deep fascination with history, but I also sincerely love and enjoy middle schoolers. Getting to spend my days surrounded by topics I love with people that I love is amazing. My favorite or most unique lesson that I teach is, I host a tea party in my classroom and play a podcast about the Boston Tea Party as part of our Revolutionary War unit. The kids love it. The most fulfilling moments on the job are when students go out of their way to find me and give me hugs or ask for advice. I love getting to teach them about history, but I love making connections and making a difference even more. I keep students engaged by changing up what we do from day to day. Rules and expectations in my classroom are predictable, but lessons never are. Something else I'm passionate about is my family. I have two incredible kids of my own that keep me on my toes and keep life exciting, and a husband who is always supportive and encouraging. My favorite subject in school was social studies, and my favorite teacher of all time was my social studies teacher at Oakland High School, Mr. Schneider. His passion for history and his students made everyone want to be in his class. It was always fun and interesting. I hope that I am half the teacher that he was. Capitol coverage. Illinois among 12 states to sue as Trump seeks forced compliance with gender order. Illinois and 11 other states sued the Trump administration over its move to withhold potentially hundreds of billions of dollars in grant funding from states that refused to comply with the Trump administration's definitions of sex and gender. President Donald Trump, on the first day of his second term, issued an executive order instructing federal agencies to recognize only a person's sex assigned at birth. It disregarded the concept of gender identity as a false claim, dismissing the self-identification of any individual who does not conform to the administration's definition of sex. The administration now says states and other entities that don't comply with that executive order will be ineligible for billions of dollars in federal grant funding allocated through the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services for health education in public schools, medical research, and workforce development programs that train medical professionals on topics including rural health, addiction treatment, and senior health. Illinois, for example, allows its residents to change the sex on their birth certificates by signing a statement affirming their gender designation or intersex condition. In their lawsuit, the states called the latest Trump directive a novel and ambiguous funding condition. The Trump administration is attempting to hold billions of dollars hostage in an attempt to force states to exclude and discriminate against people who are transgender. Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul said in a statement, "Everyone deserves to live authentically, and I will continue to push back against the administration's repeated and cruel attempts to erase transgender Americans." Trump's order further directed federal agencies to remove all students and policies that were inclusive of other gender identities and to take all necessary and legally permissible steps to end funding that promotes alternate definitions of sex and gender. In their lawsuit, the states alleged the administration's purpose was to exclude transgender, intersex, non-binary, and gender-diverse individuals and make denial of their existence official policy. HHS has long required states to certify compliance with the Title IX of Education Amendments of 1972, the landmark civil rights law passed to prevent sex discrimination in federally funded programs, including in sports. The new conditions, however, compel states to adhere not only to the Title IX requirements, but also to the Trump order. Grand jury indicts suspect in vandalism of Vance's home. Defense, purely a mental health issue, not political. A grand jury on Wednesday indicted the individual accused of vandalizing the Ohio home of Vice President J.D. Vance and causing other property damage on federal charges. The three-count indictment charges William D. DeFore, 26, of Cincinnati, with damaging government property, engaging in physical violence against any person or property in a restricted building or grounds, and assaulting, resisting, or impeding federal officers. DeFore faces up to 10 years in prison on each of the first two charges and up to 20 years on the third. Defense attorney Paul Loffman, listed as representing DeFore, declined to comment on the indictment. Loffman has previously said that the situation represents purely a mental health issue and that his client was not motivated by politics. Court records show that separate charges of vandalism, criminal trespass, criminal damaging, and obstruction initially brought against DeFore in state court, mostly misdemeanors, were dropped Friday. Federal prosecutors alleged that the Secret Service saw someone run along the front fence of Vance's residence in Cincinnati's upscale East Walnut Hills neighborhood just after midnight January 5th and then breached the property line. The person, later identified as DeFore, was armed with a hammer and tried to break out the window of an unmarked Secret Service vehicle on the way up the driveway before moving toward the front of the home and breaking 14 historic window panes, according to a federal affidavit. Damage done to security enhancements around the windows was valued at $28,000, according to the filing. A federal judge ruled Tuesday that DeFore must remain incarcerated pending trial. On social media and in interviews, Vance has thanked the Secret Service and Cincinnati police for their work on the case. He also declined to speculate on a motive while calling the suspect a very sick individual. U.S. suspending 75 nations' immigrant visa processing. Administration wants to bar any who'd rely on public benefits. The State Department said Wednesday it will suspend the processing of immigrant visas for citizens of 75 countries, including Afghanistan, Iran, Russia, and Somalia, whose nationals the Trump administration has deemed likely to require public assistance while living in the United States. The State Department, led by Secretary of State Marco Rubio, said it had instructed consular officers to halt immigration visa applications from the countries affected in accordance with a broader order issued in November that tightened rules around potential immigrants who might become public charges in the U.S. The step builds on earlier immigration and travel bans by the administration on nearly 40 countries and is part of President Donald Trump's ongoing efforts to tighten U.S. entry standards for foreigners. The Trump administration is bringing an end to the abuse of Americans' immigration system by those who would extract wealth from the American people, the department said in a statement. Immigration visa processing from these 75 countries will be paused while the State Department reassesses immigration processing procedures to prevent the entry of foreign nationals who would take welfare and public benefits. The suspension, which will begin Wednesday, will not apply to applicants seeking non-immigrant visas or temporary tourist or business visas, who make up the vast majority of visa seekers. Demand for non-immigrant visas is expected to rise dramatically in the coming months and years due to the upcoming 2026 World Cup and 2028 Olympics, both of which the U.S. will host or co-host. Cable calls for screening of non-immigrant visa applicants. A separate notice went to all U.S. embassies and consulates, said that non-immigrant visa applications should be screened for the possibility that they might seek public benefits in the United States. With the uncovering of massive public benefits fraud across the United States, the Trump administration is laser-focused on eliminating and preventing fraud in public benefits programs, said the cable that referred specifically to most non-immigrant visa applications and was sent on Monday. The cable, a copy of which was obtained by the Associated Press, urged consular officers to ensure that foreigners wanting to travel to the U.S. have been fully vetted and screened for whether they may rely on public services before they are issued a visa. The cable noted several times that it is up to the applicant to prove that they would not apply for public benefits while in the U.S., and said consular officials who suspect the applicant might apply should require them to fill out a form proving their financial bona fides. Consular officials must consider a range of personal details. The November guidance on which Wednesday's decision is based directed to U.S. embassy and consulate officials to comprehensively and thoroughly vet visa applicants to demonstrate that they will not need to rely on public benefits from the government any time after their admission to the U.S. While federal law already required those seeking permanent residency or legal status to prove they wouldn't be a public charge, Trump in his first term widened the range of benefit programs that could disqualify applicants, and the guidelines in the cable appear to go further in scope. Immigrants seeking entry into the U.S. already undergo a medical exam by a physician who has been approved by a U.S. embassy. They are screened for communicable diseases like tuberculosis and asked to disclose any history of drug or alcohol use, mental health conditions, or violence. They're also required to have a number of vaccinations. The new directive expanded those with more specific requirements. It said consular officials must consider a range of specific details about people seeking visas, including their age, health, family status, finances, education, skills, and any past use of public assistance, regardless of the country. It also said that they should assess applicants' English proficiency and can do so by conducting interviews in English. Experts said at the time it could further limit who gets to enter the country at a time when the Republican administration is already tightening those rules. The countries affected by the suspension announced Wednesday are Afghanistan, Albania, Algeria, Antigua and Barbuda, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Bahamas, Bangladesh, Barbados, Belarus, Belize, Bhutan, Bosnia, Brazil, Burma, Cambodia, Cameroon, Cape Verde, Colombia, Congo, Cuba, Dominica, Egypt, Eritrea, Ethiopia, Fiji, Gambia, Georgia, Ghana, Grenada, Guatemala, Guinea, Haiti, Iran, Iraq, Ivory Coast, Jamaica, Jordan, Kazakhstan, Kosovo, Kuwait, Kyrgyzstan, Laos, Lebanon, Liberia, Libya, Macedonia, Moldova, Mongolia, Montenegro, Morocco, Nepal, Nicaragua, Nigeria, Pakistan, Republic of the Congo, Russia, Rwanda, St. Kitts and Nevis, St. Lucia, St. Vincent, and the Grenadines, Senegal, Sierra Leone, Somalia, South Sudan, Sudan, Syria, Tanzania, Thailand, Togo, Tunisia, Uganda, Uruguay, Uzbekistan, and Yemen. U.S. Supreme Court. Representative Boast's vote count challenge revived. The Supreme Court on Wednesday revived a Republican challenge to a law that allows the counting of late-arriving mail ballots, a target of President Donald Trump. The High Court majority ruled that candidates can sue over vote counting rules, even if they haven't shown a clear effect on the outcome of the race. Win or lose, candidates suffer when the process departs from the law, Chief Justice John Roberts wrote. The court didn't rule on late-arriving mail-in ballots themselves, but will hear on another case on the broader issue this spring. Requiring candidates to show that a rule could affect the outcome before challenging its legality risks court entanglement in elections during the high-pressure late stages of the process, Roberts wrote. The court ruled 7-2 to grant U.S. Representative Mike Boast, Republican, Illinois, and two other candidates a new day in court, although it didn't decide their underlying claim. Two justices in the majority, Amy Coney Barrett and Elena Kagan, said they would have allowed Boast to sue, but not any candidate for office. Justices Ketanji Brown Jackson and Sonia Sotomayor dissented. Probe started on Dems in illegal orders video message. Democratic lawmakers who appeared in a video urging members of the military to resist illegal orders confirmed Wednesday that they are under investigation from the Trump administration, a remarkable step by the Justice Department that comes after the president accused the lawmakers of sedition for their words. The four House members and two senators all previously served in the military or at intelligence agencies. The FBI contacted them for interviews late last year after their 90-second video was released, and they now say that they have been contacted by the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Columbia, a significant escalation in the investigation. Senator Elisa Slotkin of Michigan, a former CIA analyst, first revealed the outrage from prosecutors in an interview with the New York Times on Wednesday. Excuse me. She posted a video on Twitter saying the office of the U.S. Attorney, Jeanine Pirro, the chief federal prosecutor in the nation's capital, reached out last week asking to interview her. "This is the president's playbook," she said. "Truth doesn't matter, facts don't matter, and anyone who disagrees with him becomes an enemy." Mideast conflict, U.S., phase two for Gaza ceasefire. Priorities include disarming Hamas, establishing technocratic government. The United States said Wednesday that it is moving into the next phase of a Gaza ceasefire plan that involves disarming Hamas, rebuilding the war-ravaged territory, and establishing the group of Palestinian experts that will administer daily affairs in Gaza under American supervision. President Donald Trump's envoy, Steve Witkoff, said on Twitter that the deal that the Republican president helped broker was entering its second phase following 2 years of war between Israel and Hamas, including the establishment of a technocratic government in Gaza. While Wednesday's announcement indicates a key step forward, a new government in Gaza and the ceasefire agreement face a number of huge challenges, including the deployment of an international security force to supervise the deal and the difficult process of disarming Hamas. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, January 15th, 2026. Please stay tuned for Part 2.